This is CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning. This is Sex Talk with John T. Searle and Tamar. This is Unradio. This is Unscripted. And this is Uncensored. So we do say, let's start that again, shall we? We are doing something really special for the next 3 weeks. We're focusing on the topic of expanded orgasm for women. And this morning, we are sharing an interview that Tamar and I did a few weeks back with Steve Bodansky, who brought expanded orgasm to the world. He and his partner Vera wrote an amazing book called Extended Massive Orgasm, explaining the principles of this. And I met Steve very early in my journey of teaching and learning and exploration. And he and Vera were incredibly helpful and was one of the first workshops that I teach and teach today because I'm still learning so much more about it. Next week, we are doing a live expanded orgasm lesson in the studio. So you're going to be able to learn how to do this with your partner at home. And the following week, we are doing something really special. Tamar is going to have an expanded orgasm experience and then we are going to talk about it. So this is incredibly important technique. And when I say that, and a while ago I was thinking about what makes a workshop or a technique or an experience or a practice important. So what it does, when it's important, and in my vocabulary of being important, it means that it has incredible possibilities for us. It helps us change the patterns that we are in sexually. Now, this is huge and so important to understand, and I talk about this lots because it is so important. We work in terms of patterns, and our sexual patterns are really deep. They are deeply set. Most of them are subconscious. So when we try and change something, when we try and do something different with our sexuality, we have to know how. Because you say to a lot of people, so would you like to do something different sexually? And they say yes. And that's absolutely fine. But then you start thinking about it and they have no idea what to do. So they go back to doing what it is that they've always done. When we have a different practice, we can do something different. So this starts to change the way that our body reacts to sex, the way that our body responds to sex, and it allows us and teaches us to do something different. That opens the door to so much exploration. And with Steve, we're going to talk a little bit about what expanded orgasm is, and the lesson next week go into much greater detail of what that is and how to make it happen. And I have to tell you that if there is one thing that is going to change the way that you see yourself as a pleasure being, that you experience pleasure, both giving and receiving, it is expanded orgasm. And that makes it an incredibly exciting experience. Sex Talk on CliffCentral.com. This is Unradio. This is Unscripted. And this is without a doubt Uncensored. Uncensored.
Uncensored.
Uncensored. John T. and Tamar. Hi. With such a special guest that I am so, so happy to be talking to, Steve Bodansky. Good morning, Steve, because morning there for you.
And good afternoon, whatever it is there.
Yeah,
it's just, evening.
Yeah, 4:30 in the afternoon.
Late at night by now.
No, 4:30 in the afternoon.
All right.
So this is really a conversation that I've wanted to have for a long, long time and was remiss in doing it. Because when I started my journey of teaching, I came across your work, you and Vera, and it had such an impact on me. And we had some contact and you guys were amazing and so inspirational. for me in your writing, in your work, in the way that you were, and almost 20 years later, here we are. So I express incredible thanks to you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
So
yeah, I remember when I first heard from you a number of years ago.
Yeah. So how did the expanded orgasm journey start for you?
One stroke at a time. Well, actually, it's a long story, actually, but to make the shorter version, I found this commune that was actually based in California, but they had houses all over the country. And I was living in Brooklyn, New York, part of New York City, and there was a house there, and I kind of stumbled into it because I needed a place to live. I was like 24, I think, at the time. And I was working like about three blocks away in this, at the medical school there. And I moved in. I was married, but my wife had like split. And then her parents had institutionalized her. She came back, and I left the commune. And then she left about 6 months later, I guess. And I moved into this commune, and I eventually wound up going to California about 5 years later. So I kind of, this new girl I met took me out of the place. The women team take me out of the commune, and when I'm by myself, I go into it. So yeah, they did classes about orgasm, and that's where I learned my material and where I met Vera. So that's where it started. And then we left that commune, I guess, I lived there 13 years, and then we started our own business and our own teaching and our own style. And we've been doing that ever since. But Vera stopped doing that now, pretty much. So she still gets off. But she's 80. She'll be 83 this week.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
I said she has Alzheimer's now, but she still gets off. And she's like, I think her ability to have these great orgasms and to feel her body really keeps her happy still.
Sure.
That's amazing.
She's like the happiest person with Alzheimer's I've ever seen.
That is just the most beautiful thing. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I mean, I'm sure so many people with that condition would love to be able to experience this.
Yeah, and she's going to ask for, I got to kind of like trick her, not trick her into it, because she doesn't know what I'm talking about. But when she starts feeling, she feels. So it's pretty interesting. It's an adventure.
Okay, that's fantastic. So how long have you guys been teaching this?
Well, we started teaching at the commune, which was, I guess I got certified in 1987. She was certified in 1980. So I was teaching it probably in the before even I got certified, but showing orgasms was 1987. So for 31 years, I've been demonstrating extended orgasms.
Wow. That's absolutely amazing. So when you say certified by who? Like, what was that process?
Well, it's changed over the years.
Yeah.
When I did it, was like there was no – they had a sensuality department after a number of years. But when I did it, there was no like sensuality department. It was just a couple of people who were certified before me.
Okay.
And they didn't really – I mean, I was doing – we – the place taught courses, and I was taking all kinds of different sensuality courses while I was living there. So we had this one program where we were technicians. It was like and women and men were both doing that, and then people would come to see you and to get off, and they pay you in this kind of like monopoly money, so it wasn't like illegal. And so I see like dozens of people a day, so I really practiced a lot.
Wow! And this is all at this commune.
Yeah.
Okay.
These different periods. Right now, the people are older and not as. I don't think they don't have these games anymore.
Yeah.
Because the guy who started died a number of years ago, so it's a little slowed down. Okay. We all have a little bit.
That was Vic Baranko. Is that right?
Yes, that was the guy who started this thing.
Okay. Because there's very little information about him. In fact, there's almost none. And I remember reading your book, and I think at some point in the book you said you guys were going to write something about him or about his ideas and his visions.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Extended Massive Love, A Love Story and More, because the place is called Moore or Morehouse or Moore University at one point.
Okay.
So I did write a book. It's available like on Kindle. There's a printed version, but it's so expensive to buy because there's a bunch of photographs in it, and I guess that makes the price a lot more expensive. So it's like $70 for the printed version, but I think it's, you know, $7 or something, or $6 for the Kindle version, and it has a lot of the information there, all the games we played, and also a lot about Vera's background and how we met and what we did before and after. So it's kind of memoirs, but a lot about what we did at the communes, because that was a big part of my life for a number of years. And
did that book come before or after the Extended Massive Orgasm book?
Well, I started writing it before, but it came out afterwards, and I'd self-published that. I guess our publisher wasn't interested in publishing memoirs, so they called them. So I self-published that. So it came out afterwards, a number of years after. I'm not sure when. I think we did 4 books with the publisher first, and then I self-published that one.
That's amazing. And before that, there was no kind of expanded orgasm. This is where it all originated.
As far as I know, I hadn't heard about it. Most people still haven't heard about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
and that's like, you know, I guess the first person who was certified was in 1976.
Wow.
So that's 42 years ago. So you think it'd be more widespread by now.
Yeah. That's fascinating, because it was one of the first things that I started teaching. And two nights ago, I taught a small group of people, and it was the feedback I got from it was that it was one of the best workshops that I've ever taught, because the perceptions were so different. And it just has been such a part of my life for so long, and that is really thanks to you guys.
Do you do demonstrations, live demonstrations?
We have done in the past, but firstly, in South Africa, we're quite a conservative country. And at, and at the workshops, we have a real mix of people, of singles, of couples. And to make the space safe, for some people, that's considered incredibly,
taboo.
Risky, taboo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very provocative. And for some people, it would be pushing the boundaries to a space of great discomfort.
Right.
But we have done that, and even did a couple of years ago, a few minutes of a live expanded orgasm on the show. With somebody talking and then the woman who experienced it talking afterwards about what she had experienced it. And that was really beautiful and powerful.
I actually asked Jonty to be treated by him and record a session of expanded orgasm and explain actually how I feel, try to keep some consciousness. But I don't know if it's possible. Maybe it's not supposed to be. You know, we're not supposed to stay in this world while we're going through this experience. Maybe we're not supposed to advocate it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've been advocating it.
No, advocate it for sure, but not while we're going through the experience on air, maybe. I don't know.
I think it'd be awesome to do.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
It's just the audio part, right, you're talking about?
Yes.
The
studio that we have is wired for camera, but at the moment the platform doesn't really do a lot of video. We're moving in that direction. Because the other thing in South Africa is we have incredibly restrictive data charges, where data online data is incredibly expensive. We're one of the most expensive in the world. And there's a huge campaign here at the moment to bring the prices down. But, you know, there's incredible poverty in the country, and it makes it inaccessible to a lot of people.
Yeah. So have you seen my book, Orgasm Matters? Have you seen that one?
No.
Wow.
That's a couple. I think I read a couple of years, 3 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
And one chapter of, I guess it's one guy and two women, and they're getting certified in front of this large group of people, and it's a made-up story, but I use things that we did.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, it's kind of like dialogue and people asking them questions, so it's something you probably could read maybe over the air.
It's
a whole chapter.
That would be very powerful. So take us through the principles of expanded orgasm, please, because it'll be awesome to hear it from you.
Principles. Let me think. Well, I mean, it's, well, first of all, it's manual stimulation. At least that's the way to start.
Yes.
And to learn. And you have to have a good communication first between the people. And it's usually a man, or it could be a woman also, who's what we call the doer. So if you take, you have two roles, you have somebody being done or receiving the orgasm and somebody producing the orgasm. So it's not like, you know, I'll rub your back while you rub my back. It's like, I'll rub your back.
Yes.
Right now, or where I'm rubbing. And the person who's receiving the orgasm, their job is just to kind of relax as much as they can and feel as much as they can and put their attention on wherever they're being touched and feel their body and to approve and acknowledge any sensation that they're enjoying. And that's pretty much all they have to do is just lie there and feel and enjoy.
Okay.
And the person who's doing it, that's where the techniques basically come in. And you want to take control of the other person's orgasm, of their level of tumescence, we call it. So in order to do that, you have to have your attention on that person and to feel your body while you're doing that and to proceed according to how you're feeling. And you're touching also for your own pleasure. You're not touching actually to make an effect. You're touching because it feels good to your hands or feels good to you.
And that creates a space of incredible intimacy and connection between the people.
It can, you know, depending on the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that focus does because, you know, being so present with someone for me is an expression of intimacy regardless of the context of the relationship.
Yeah, so the person receiving the orgasm, you see, has to surrender their pleasure to the other person.
Mm.
And the other person who's doing it has to take control of this pleasure.
Yeah. And then,
but in a way, you know, everybody's really in control. I mean, even the person who's doing it, there's a line about cause and effect that the way to be cause is you create the space, you create the objects in the space, and you create the time the objects exist. And if you're at effect, the person receiving it, you also create the time, the place, and the objects. And then you forget that you did it.
Mm.
So everybody's really cause. But by forgetting, you become effect. Okay. And that's why you receive. Because receiving the pleasure is where the most pleasure is at.
Mm.
But it's also the most vulnerable place to be because, you know, it's scary to just be totally at effect of somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, people have to give up control.
And that's so difficult for so many people.
Yeah, so that's why there's different techniques how to be better at taking control, how to put somebody at effect, how to have them feel comfortable, how to have them feel, you know, safe.
Mm. Yeah, the safety is the hugest part of that.
And the more you practice and the better you become at it, you know, the person can just feel, you know, can feel that, and they can be more trusting. You know, it's like if you go to a heart doctor or, you know, a surgeon or something, you know, and he's done one surgery, you know, you'd be kind of, you know, and it didn't turn out very well. You'd be kind of afraid, you know, but if you heard, oh, he's done thousands of surgeries and, you know, he's done transplants and they're all successes, you know, well, I guess I can, you know, go on anesthesia and let him do it, you know.
Yeah, so there's enormous confidence within the giver. There needs to be incredible confidence there.
Yes, you have to be confident and enjoying what you're doing.
Mm. And again, for me, that's very much the presence, the state of presence that creates. Because so many people during sex or any sexual experience of any level are not really present within themselves. They're in their minds.
Right.
They're kind of in fantasy. They come back to what they're doing. Then they think about work and so many other things.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think it's okay to fantasize if that enhances the experience. But you know, but like you can't be like worrying about when am I going to come or when am I going to have an orgasm or when is it going to get better. You have to feel each stroke and enjoy that stroke to the max. From both positions.
So the perception that gives people, or one of the things about it, is taking that immediate goal out of that equation, that it's much more about pleasure than the goal of orgasm.
Right. The orgasm's there already. You just have to tap into it. Mm. And if you're trying to get to some place that you're already at, you're never going to get there. I think they say the same thing about like enlightenment. You can't get to enlightenment. You already are enlightened. Yeah. The same way with orgasm. You're already in orgasm. You just have to be present.
That's such a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The orgasm is already there.
Yeah.
Just revealing it.
Yeah. You are orgasmic and you just have to acknowledge it and allow it.
I think Vic Branco said you have to not confront orgasm in order not to have it.
But isn't it just where all the Western thinking is, I want to have something, I want to fight for it, I'm going to be active, I'm not going to surrender into it.
Yeah, and people are really messed up about sex anyhow in our, probably the whole world.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, in South Africa we have an incredibly high level of sexual abuse, and so many women struggle to have orgasms, have pleasure, and so many men are so sexually disempowered.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, most people think you have to, you know, stick it in order to have sex or have orgasms, and then women don't have. You know, it's commonly known that most women don't have orgasms with intercourse, but they still think they should.
Something
they're not doing right or something. There's something wrong with them.
The media has created an incredible amount of pressure around that, of this is how sex should be, which is a very, very narrow definition, instead of the fact that it's about pleasure. And in the field of pleasure are so many amazing possibilities.
Yeah, but it also creates taboos, which are fun which creates eroticism, which can be fun. So there's always a silver lining to every cloud.
Yes, absolutely.
And if everybody was getting off grade, I wouldn't have a job for all these years.
It's also so interesting that when we think about what are we doing wrong, but now already we have the amazing biology science to explain that women open up sexually and really release into sexual pleasure after half an hour, 45 minutes. So what are we doing wrong? But we want to give it only 5 minutes. So it's like we already know so much and we still don't accept the fact that we should make time for pleasure. We really should because it's so much fun.
Yeah, and with the extended massive orgasm practice, even if you do it for 5 minutes, you're an orgasm from the first stroke or before even. Mm. It's just like when I have clients, I just say, all right, just sit back there, lie back against the chair, you know, feel, you know, maybe don't cross your legs, open your legs, you know, a little bit, and just feel your pussy. And most women can actually, you know, start having the orgasm just by putting their attention on their pussy,
sure.
On their clitoris, down there, as some people call it.
Mm.
And I or somebody who's trained can feel when they're feeling that. It's like, you know, it's like the energy changes.
Yeah, it changes incredibly when the connection's there.
So then if you can do that and you can lie down and then with each stroke take it even higher, then after 5 minutes you have this 5 minute orgasm, which is quite a bit of time of orgasming for most people, I would say. So even in 5 minutes, you can have a great time. You don't need an hour.
Oh, okay. That's new for me. Thank you so much for that. I have to now get to all your books.
Yeah, I wrote one book called Instant Orgasm, I think it was called.
That's amazing. So, Steve, does this commune still exist?
Yes, it still exists. It's not too far from where we live. We don't really have much to do with them anymore.
Yeah.
You see a few of the people. We're friendly with them, but they still teach this information. They said they're a lot older now than they were, and the guru's not around, but they still do, like, they still certify people, and they still do similar courses that we do, where we train people. Yeah, they're a good source. They're a little expensive.
Yeah, it seems to be, from what you were saying, quite a sexually or sensually oriented space. Was that kind of the focus of it?
Well, the guy was, I don't know, just a different thinker, and he was creating an experimental lifestyle, and he said if people had to live together, they had to get sex handled.
Absolutely.
So people didn't sneak around on, so people would have affairs, but everybody would be aware of them. It wasn't secret affairs. It was, you know, just affairs. So a lot of people, and they started back, I guess, in the late 60s. So there was, like, you know, kind of free sex before AIDS. So there was a lot more, you know, all kinds of things were available back then.
And that's one of the amazing things about the expanded orgasm experience, is that it's not a penetrative technique.
No, though, I mean, you, like, in our video, we show that for a first half hour where there's no penetration with the hands. The second half hour, we use the second hand with different penetrating strokes and movements to add on to the continual clitoral stimulation.
Yeah. I meant cock penetration.
No, penis is not necessary for an orgasm for a woman.
Absolutely.
For a guy, I think it probably most necessary.
Definitely.
Let's start the equation as a penis is not necessary for a female orgasm. Let's start there.
Yeah.
And for most men, that would really, it changes the equation, because, you know, I've been thinking and writing and talking so much about a new story of sex that we need. And in this new story, I mean, if you take that sentence and you say that a penis is not necessary for a female orgasm, that changes the male sexual definition enormously.
Altogether.
Because so many men, their sexual definition is in their genitals.
In the penetration.
So what happens if that's not there?
Well, they don't have the pressure, and it's a lot more fun.
Absolutely.
And that's, it takes so much pressure off, because there's so much of a performance for men.
Right, and it doesn't take the penis off the table. It just, you know, it's just another tool that can be used if the woman wants it.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah, I think I have to write something about that, because it really changes. It's an article that I published this week, but it's in line with that. But it changes that equation so much, just simply to say,
and it, isn't
would you
it,
be sexually?
But isn't, yeah,
that?
Isn't it just so simple? Hmm. But it's the whole, some of the biggest issues between couples and in sex, defining sex. So what do you do for half an hour? You said it doesn't, there's no penetration for half an hour.
If you look at evolution, I think most animals, mammals, and I guess all kinds, they have some kind of penis involvement in sex. They don't use their hands or mouth. They haven't developed the skills that, you know, just like they haven't developed, you know, great artwork either.
Yeah.
You know, like humans can, or great music, or great cooking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all animals eat, but they don't, like, prepare the food where it tastes really great.
Mm.
You know, so humans have developed, you know, these techniques. I guess it hasn't been for that long, you know, how to create more pleasure, just like they've created, you know, artwork and good food.
Mm.
So, you know, evolutionary speaking, I guess this, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know?
And it kind of puts it in a space where, evolutionary speaking, then so many people are still at really kind of a
primal,
primal level of sex without subtlety. Yeah, absolutely. Where it's just kind of, let's get it in and let's have an orgasm, and generally that's more for one person than the other.
Yeah, well, they haven't been interested enough to find out about it, or they haven't been exposed to the information.
And that's,
so if you haven't thought about it, it's not available. You know, it's not.
And that's
That's fascinating because we have such an obsession with sex. I mean, more web searches are about aspects of porn than anything else. I mean, even we have a cabinet minister here, or an ex-cabinet minister, who made a video of himself. He's masturbating and...
allegedly want to put his penis in somebody's mouth.
That's what it says. And this has gone on to Pornhub, and it's, I think at the moment, got over 500,000 views. I mean, who the heck wants to watch a cabinet minister playing with themselves where they can't even do their fucking jobs in South Africa properly? But that's a whole different story. But there's such an obsession in our society with sex, and yet we're at such a low level frequency of it, where most of the world operates on kind of the porn model of sex, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a true statement.
And I've also in the past said that if more world leaders experienced orgasm, like really good, deep, expanded orgasm on a regular basis, our world would be a very different place.
Yeah, also if there are more female world leaders, I think that would help too.
But female leaders that are going through expanded, massive, you know, massive
orgasm. Yeah, not trying to be men.
I don't think Margaret Thatcher had too many orgasms.
No. Well, from what I saw, and I haven't been following the elections that have been happening in America, apparently there are now a lot more women represented in the different houses than ever before.
Yeah, they had a pretty big turnover. A lot of the women won, and some of them was one was like a, I think she's a lesbian and a former MMA fighter and all kinds of. One was a woman from Somalia, I guess, background. Another, wow. all different kinds of backgrounds, and it's pretty impressive. So this country is changing. It's just the guy on top is a little slow.
That's a very charitable way of putting it,
isn't it? Isn't it interesting that it looks like that nobody's really interested in sex, but in control or in ego games or actually quick gratification? It's not really about sex, isn't it?
It's not about pleasure, anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's where sex is a tool and a weapon.
It's about power.
Yeah.
It's about power and
Yeah, I think it was Oscar Wilde who said that everything in life is about sex except sex, and sex is about power.
Yeah.
Until we get it into the state of pleasure.
Hmm. Yeah.
So how do you start? Well,
Yes, I guess when he was around, there wasn't a whole lot of information about pleasure.
No, and he was very persecuted, you know, for being gay.
Right. He was around Freud's time, I think, wasn't he? Probably.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How would you like to see expanded orgasm in the world, Steve?
I would like to see it.
Yeah, where would you like to see it go? In the realm of possibility.
I don't really care. I mean, you know, I think it's spreading slowly, and you know, maybe there's a tipping point where it spreads quicker. You know, but like you said, I think it'd be beneficial to the politicians and that, you know, people to experience more pleasure and not do the power trip. But I think people will probably turn it into a power trip too. Maybe
superpower.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in some way that's happened. So I don't know too much about this, and some guys have developed something called omming. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There are actually some students. The one who started it actually was a couple of people, but there's a few people started it, and they were students of some of our students.
Yeah, because it's based on, also, on a similar principle.
And they also took some courses from Morehouse. So they got a lot of the information. It's just a little stricter version of what we do.
Yeah. They're being shut down at the moment.
I think they did some things that pissed people off or whatever. They probably charged too much money. I don't know what they did, actually.
Yeah, there were all sorts of stories about it. But when I heard about it and I did a little bit of reading, and I kind of said, okay, so I know where this comes from.
Yeah. you know, they did good by spreading the word around quite a bit. Mm. They went to a lot of different places and cities, and they're good marketers. I don't think they they weren't like, they hadn't had years of expertise, you know, like we've had, and some of the more people have. But they were good at getting the word out, and you know, we get quite a few students who've done Oming, and you know, like I had a student last week who'd done a few Oming sessions, and she came to me for a session, and she said, "Oming was never like this," you know. So,
yeah, because I think they put it in some very strict parameters and very strict time parameters, and
yeah, I mean, you should probably speak to them. But what I've heard is, you know, they pretty much go straight for the clitoris, and there's not much communication going, and
because I don't
it's
know
not
what's
about amazing. Surrender. So I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's amazing that you're still teaching. I think it's absolutely incredible that you're still teaching.
Well, why is that?
It's just fantastic. It's beautiful.
I'm not as old. Vera's old. I'm not that.
Has nothing beautiful. To do with that. I think it's just about passion.
Yeah, that's.
You know, it's something I enjoy and something that I know how to do. So why not do it? You know,
definitely.
It's not like if I was a, you know, fireman, I couldn't do that anymore. Probably I had to retire.
And you've written a book recently on Alzheimer's, is that right?
Yes, it's called Love and Alzheimer's, and it details my emotions and what I experienced and what Vera's going through with it. And I think it's the kind of most optimistic viewpoint of Alzheimer's that I've seen. And there's a lot of journaling in it, but a lot of it, you know, the beginning part wasn't a journal, it's kind of just describing mostly the emotions that come up, and then developed into a journal. And then on my website now, I continued, well, cause I kind of finished the book, I think it was like over a year ago, year and a half ago, and then somebody edited it. So while she was editing the book, and took her over a year to edit it because she wasn't a professional editor, I was self-publishing it, I kept writing my journal. So now I'm posting on my website, orgasmmatters.com, or extendedmassiveorgasm.com. It's the same place. And I have a blog there where I've been putting up continued journals. So it's an extra, I've journaled for over a year now, a year and a half. So I'm putting like up, you know, every once a week, I'll put like a couple of weeks up. So it still isn't up to date, but it's getting closer.
So beyond the pleasure that it gives Vera, does this have any health impact on Alzheimer's, do you think?
Well, I it's hard to tell, really. I think she becomes more conscious, I think, afterwards. She enjoys her food more.
Okay.
She tastes better. It doesn't last like for a long time, because that same night she, you know, we may have it like at 4 o'clock, and by, you know, midnight or something, she's kind of, you know, she's less conscious again.
Okay.
But for a few hours, I think it boosts her consciousness and her ability to relate and stuff. Like when I go into it, sometimes she'll say, you know, I'll say, "Take your pants off." She's like, I can't do that. You know, like, you know, she's sometimes, because in Alzheimer's, you kind of revert to when you were younger.
Yeah.
But she's a teenager sometimes, and, you know, my mother wouldn't like that kind of thing. I say, "Oh, your mother's okay with it." You know, so I kind of seduce her. And then when we're finished, she says, "You're so wonderful. You love me so much." You know, she'll say nice things like that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it's like, her attitude changes, or her consciousness changes.
That's intense. That's powerful.
And her orgasms aren't as intense as they used to be, but occasionally she surprises me.
Yeah.
So like, I used to do, you know, in like in our video, I'm pretty much on her clitoris, and there were specific techniques, and I'm much less technique oriented now. I'm kind of just like, hey, whatever feels good right now, I'm going to do that and go with that. Mm. So if it's touching her thigh or just lubricating her labia for a number of minutes, if she gets off on that, that's good enough, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. The thing that boggles me is that she might be one of the only women in the world that are enjoying and having pleasure thanks to your relationship and your both of your teachings. But I must say that she must be one of the only ones in the world. And I'm quite confident when I say that. It's beautiful. It's an inspiration for me. For where I take Jonty's teachings, and obviously I pick up wonderful teachers, including now you. and it's beautiful that this is now one of my missions, to receive this kind of pleasure and to give pleasure to women that are in different conditions of consciousness, or, you know, of course you have to form a very strong relationship and so on, but this is an inspiration wherever it will take me.
Yeah, I think that's why it's good to learn this before you get out.
Sure, yeah. Sure, of course.
Difficult to,
of course,
to prep to get into it.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. You know, if you look at how many people suffer from levels of Alzheimer's, of dementia, of various mental states, excuse me, of how many of their relationships or pleasure get cut down or stop because maybe of their partner's perspective on that, and the fact that there might not be anybody to pleasure people in those spaces.
Blue. Okay. There we go.
Yeah, I agree. That's, I feel blessed for that. Because, yeah. And besides the orgasm, just, you know, we do a lot of kissing and hugging. I mean, I would say I kiss her like 100 times a day and hug her 100 times a day or something, maybe not 100, but close, you know, a lot. You know, we'll take walks and I'll just, there's a pretty fountain and we'll say, let's stop by this fountain, and I give her a really nice hug and a short kiss, and then we go move on again. And it, I don't know, it keeps her, I think, and it keeps me, it's fun, and it's something, makes the walk more fun, and it makes her happier, it makes me happier.
That's beautiful. Because so many people, I think, in that space don't have physical contact or nowhere near, not loving, tender touch, you know, heart touch, that's incredible.
We hold hands when we walk, and we hold hands, and even when we're sitting on the couch, we'll hold hands, and that's what I write in the book. You know, all the positive things that one can do, because a person with Alzheimer's can feel and, you know, and can hold hands as good as anybody else. It's just the memory from is you know, goes, but they feel the present.
I wonder if anybody's done any studies about, you know, the impact of physical contact and affection, not even sexual, but just, you know, some beautiful, gentle massage, back massage, foot massage, just the comfort that would bring people in that space. And I look at the journey my grandmother went through and the anger and the fear that she had.
All right. Well, I don't know if the word spreads in the book, then maybe more people will do that. But I think the sales haven't been. Well, self-pleasuring is difficult, anyhow.
Absolutely.
The first book came out. We had Valvera had done this interview in New York City with this high power. It was like a boardroom, and you know. Famous women were there, and there's one journalist was there, and she wanted to do a story about, because Vera spoke to the group about orgasm, and she wanted to do a magazine story about Vera and put it in the New York magazine, the New Yorker, I guess it was called. And they kept saying, maybe next month, and they never put the article in. And then a new magazine came around called Talk Magazine. It was only out for a couple of years. It was a really good magazine, and they put the article in there. And then the whole world was contacting us, because I guess it was an important magazine at the time, about this one-hour orgasm. Mm. So we getting all kinds of publicity. And at the same time, our book came out. So our first book was like on the top 30 list on Amazon. It was really, you know, it got a lot of publicity. And the second book got quite a bit of publicity, but not quite as much. And then the rest didn't get any publicity at all, hardly. Just, you know, a little bit we did here and there. So the first two books still sell the most.
Well, I really hope people listening to this will look at that. Are the books available through your website?
Yeah, or on Amazon, they, you know, look for my name and you'll see authors. And I think I've written 11 books now. Even wrote a sex novel called Extended Massive Orgasm, the novel. The real name I wanted to call would be maybe a sex novel, because the girl's name was maybe, you know, colon the sex novel, because the girl who's like the heroine of the story, her name is Maybe.
That's really
and it's a fun, really fun story. I mean, I had the most fun writing that. I was like turned on writing that story all the time.
That is so cool.
Full of orgasm.
Divine.
And it's about young people, so you know it might be taboo for some.
I love that, because they kind of the logo that I work with is a path of pleasure, a path of possibility, and all the possibilities that pleasure creates. Not only sexual pleasure, but the pleasure in life, full stop. And the more in touch we are consciously with our sexuality and sensuality, the more pleasure we have in life generally.
Yeah, definitely. So true.
And the more pleasure we have in life consciously, the more we enjoy sex and sensuality as well. So kind of they feed into each other, this expanding spiral of possibility.
Yeah. It just made me think. I wrote two novels, and they're, I'm not the greatest like novel writer, but there's some good sex in them. They're fun stories. I think they're funny. But my second one was called The Switch Picture, The Evolution of Darwin.
Okay.
And that, part of it takes place in South Africa.
Okay.
Even though I've never been there, I kind of Googled it and found out about, you know, Cape Town. So it takes place in Cape Town. Kind of, because Darwin wound up in Cape Town for a while, for a short time. So that's how kind of I got to Cape Town. I kind of followed Darwin around.
Okay. Yeah, it's a beautiful city.
Yeah. This is about baseball. You probably don't know much about baseball in South Africa. They had a thing called switch hitters, where the, you know, the batter goes from either the right side or the left side, so the person can switch against the type of pitcher. And this guy's a switch pitcher, where he can pitch from the left side or the right side. And there actually is now in baseball, there is a, the, you know, I guess life follows art. Mm-hmm. They call this book art. But they really have the switch pitcher now, where the guy, you know, has one glove that fits both hands and he can switch whatever side he wants to pitch from.
Okay, so our equivalent of that would be a cricketer, like a bowler or a batsman who could
throw left or right.
Yeah, because they're very specific, the actions and everything around it, very specific. So that would be the equivalent of what we'd know in South Africa.
Yeah, and some people can, like, rub pussies with left hand or right hand.
Yeah, I can. I'm pretty ambidextrous, but my right is definitely better.
Yeah. I think in the Oming people, they made everybody use the left hand.
That's interesting.
And the reason for that, I think, was when our student, we had a student one time, and he got into a fight and broke his wrist, so he had to switch to his left hand. And he's the one who taught them. So he taught them. He believes people should use the left hand.
That's funny. You know,
it's this
old story of how a lot of kind of myths developed. There's this old Jewish story of this little girl is watching her mother cook fish. And she said, "Why are you cooking the fish with the tail out of the pan?" And the mother says, "Well, I don't know. That's what I always saw. So let's go and ask Granny." So they go and ask Granny, and they ask Granny, "Why do you cook fish with the tail out the pan?" Granny says, "I don't know, because that's what I always saw Great Granny do. So let's go and ask Great Granny." And they go and ask the great old wise grandmother. And she says, "Because we never had a pan big enough to put the whole fish in."
Basically.
There's so many things just developed out of kind of a myth without a lot of real information.
Yeah. So if you're right-handed, stick with your right hand.
Yes. Absolutely. Very, very interesting.
Most of your teaching, Steve, is in writing format?
Well, not. I mean, I started not writing. I wasn't much of a writer. I was, I was a practitioner or whatever, you know. We saw people, but Vera liked the way I wrote. So because of her appetite, I started writing. Mm-hmm. So I think now, you know, I've written quite a bit, but I prefer the actual live flesh, except for the Extended Massive Orgasm, the novel book. That was pretty orgasmic.
Wow, that Absolutely. How long have you and Vera been together?
Well, we've been married 35 years, been together longer than that. So I think it's each other about almost 40 years now. We've been rubbing our pussy.
Maybe we shouldn't ask how many years you know each other. It's more like how many years have you been rubbing her wonderful pussy. That's beautiful way to put it.
Absolutely. And all the absolute incredible hours of orgasm.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many hours would you recommend for a beautiful, loving relationship to be in an orgasmic state a day? I know it's kind of a philosophical, stupid question, but if you can give a number, what would it be?
Vera says, well, numbers are the work of the devil or something. But it's one stroke at a time. But, you know, but a woman can just feel her pussy anytime and can have an orgasm, you know, 24 hours if she wants.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, the orgasm where she can't do anything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, one stroke at a time, we're up to 24 hours.
Mm. Thank you.
1 second before.
Yeah, that's beautiful. There was an amazing thing that I read about life earlier today. It was a little meme that came up, I think, on Instagram, and it was that all that's really required of you in life is to put one foot in front of the other and do it again and take one breath in and breathe out and do it again and put it in this context and one stroke at a time and do it again.
Yeah, like I like reading Eckhart Tolle. Have you read him?
Yeah.
Being present, and being present is the only thing, the only time there is now, or the power of now.
Mm.
And one of his exercises is to kind of feel your body, you know, when you're doing anything. So like if you're talking to somebody, you can feel your body. Like I'm talking now, I can feel my body. But most of the time you kind of forget about your body and you just get into the talk or into your thoughts or whatever. And the same with orgasm. You can feel it, you know, at the moment right now. So if you're listening to this, ladies, you can feel your pussy right now and really feel that energy. And that is the beginning of an orgasm. And that is what I want to, you know, get out there.
Yeah. And so much of that, because we've become so disconnected from our bodies, and especially from our genitals, with so much guilt and shame and embarrassment and the performance around things.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of guys think they're impotent. You can't be impotent with our techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's amazing. I've been working with a man who has had his bladder removed. It was cancerous, and he had to have it removed. And we've been working through some processes of kind of connecting with his bladder and having a conversation with this to kind of close the cycle for him. And it's been amazing, because one of the things he said was that until this, he had no connection with the different parts of his body other than the simple functional awareness. And it's opened this incredible journey of exploration for him and connection with every single aspect of himself. And it's the same kind of principle, because we get so disconnected. And what he experienced was in an extreme state. But for so many women, you know, using words like down there, that's not about owning your body.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We had a client also who, I guess he had a prostate surgery and he couldn't have an erection anymore. Mm. He learned how to pleasure his wife with his hands, and they're really happy.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah. So many possibilities that there are.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, I think Vera's getting up here soon.
Okay. So we thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and sharing, and thank you for the impact that you made on my journey and through that, the people that I've been able to share with, and bringing pleasure into the world, and I'm so grateful for that.
Well, I'm grateful for your helping spread the word here too. This is great.
Thank you. And we send you so much love.
All right, thanks. And I guess people can contact you, let them know how they can contact me and all that.
Yes, please mention your website one more time.
Either orgasmmatters.com or extendedmassiveorgasm.com. It's the same website, just have two directions.
We'll put it on our notes from the show, so people that listen to this podcast, they can go whenever they want. Yeah. And this has been a true pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and we wish you so much pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.
So join us next week for a live expanded orgasm lesson, and we are going to show you how you at home can give your partner this incredible experience of pleasure. And I wish you so much pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.